Good morning. Before I actually begin, I'd like to thank everyone on two fronts. First, for making the long trek way all the way down to this far corner of the convention center. And then two, for being here so bright and early in the morning on the last day of the conference. So I'm looking forward to the other presentations. Today, a direct relationship between diet and an individual's risk of coronary artery disease is considered a foregone conclusion. But 50 years ago, this was not the case. In the years following World War II, a multidisciplinary array of health professionals formed the new field of cardiovascular epidemiology in order to study the causes and prevention of heart disease in populations. During the 1950s and the 1960s, this first generation of cardiovascular epidemiologists continually debated the exact nature of the relationship among cholesterol, diet, and cardiovascular risk. In my talk this morning, I hope to shed light on the history of debates regarding the diet-heart hypothesis, which proposed that diet was causally linked to coronary artery disease, and also demonstrate how these debates influenced the introduction of the heart-healthy diet. The diet-heart hypothesis would become one of the conceptual centerpieces of cardiovascular epidemiology and a central focus of methodological debate, as we shall see. Diet-heart struck at the core of three central issues in public health research. First, could the connection between what someone ate and their risk of heart disease be identified as a causal one, even though studies merely showed that the two factors were correlated? Second, what constituted, quote, good and, quote, bad science? Finally, researchers wondered how they could translate a population-based theory into public health guidelines for treating individual patients. So first, I have no relationships to disclose. As Vanderbilt physician George Mann explained 25 years after the introduction of the hypothesis, quote, "We never prove in science. We advance to new understanding by disproofs." To Mann, quote, "A noisy clutch of scientists is defending, excusing, delaying, procrastinating over the decision to discard a disproven hypothesis. Their tactics prevent progress." With these words, Mann chastised a sizable proportion of the American scientific community at a time when physicians and public health officials widely encouraged a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet to prevent heart attacks. And here's a very simplistic visualization of the diet-heart hypothesis. You eat your cheeseburger high in saturated fat, which increases your serum cholesterol level, which brings about plaque in one's arteries, ultimately leading to the onset of coronary artery disease and potential heart attacks down the road. Understanding how and why Mann voiced such complaints in the late 1970s brings us back to the introduction of the hypothesis in the early 1950s. In 1953, Ansel Keys, a physiologist at the University of Minnesota, known for his wartime starvation studies and the development of the K ration, proposed what would become the diet-heart hypothesis in the Journal of the Mount Sinai Hospital. Keys constructed the hypothesis based on statistical associations derived from his analysis of laboratory, mortality, and population-based data. First, he cited a high mortality rate among adults in the United States from heart disease. Second, he reported clinical and laboratory data that indicated that total blood cholesterol levels were associated with dietary fat intake. Third, he presented data from the World Health Organization in multiple countries showing that total blood cholesterol measurements could identify men who were more likely to develop coronary artery disease. Last, Keys suggested that Americans' increasingly fatty diets were linked to their increased mortality from heart disease. For the sake of time this morning, I'll be focusing on the illuminating exchanges between Ansel Keys on the left, perhaps the most prominent diet-heart advocate, and George Mann on the right, perhaps one of the most vocal diet-heart critics. Supporters and detractors of both men were also quick to chime in on these debates. But the exchanges between Keyes and Mann served to capture the Diet-Hart debates during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. A particularly useful case study for us is the Seven Countries Study. Keyes devised and launched the study in 1957 as a comparative analysis of diet, risk, and disease. Seven countries studied the diet, lifestyle, and incidence of coronary artery disease among almost 13,000 middle-aged men from Finland, Greece, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, the U.S., and Yugoslavia. One of the most distinctive aspects of the Seven Countries Study was the effort to characterize each region's diet. Researchers observed what the men ate and collected duplicates of their meals, which were then analyzed for fat, carbohydrate, and protein content. The study seemed to confirm the Diet-Hart hypothesis, that is, regional averages of saturated fat intake and blood cholesterol levels were both correlated with a population's rates of coronary artery disease. The Seven Countries Study developed out of Keyes's efforts several years before to compare diet and cardiovascular disease mortality in six countries for which statistics were already available from the WHO and the UN. Critics challenged Keyes in his selection of these six countries, however, maintaining that the study was inherently flawed because Keyes selected countries whose dietary data would prove his hypothesis. While true to a degree, Keyes may have also selected these countries for methodological reasons. He had close professional relationships with researchers in the countries he selected, and those trusted confidants provided a source of reliable data and local knowledge. Some of Keyes's critics warned of efforts to control any conceivable physiological variable that could be statistically linked to diet. As they argued, quote, quotation and repetition of the suggestive association soon creates the impression that the relationship is truly valid. And ultimately, it acquires status as a supporting link in a chain of presumed proof. Others argued that epidemiology was fundamentally incapable of proving the Diet-Hart hypothesis. George Mann himself insisted that at best, the method may supply a few clues and enough encouragement to gifted people who will find the answer in the laboratory. Despite voicing such sentiments, Mann himself conducted field studies in Africa intended to disprove Diet-Hart. By studying indigenous populations, including the Maasai of Tanzania and Kenya, Mann and his colleagues recorded that Maasai nomads living in Kenya, who subsisted on high-calorie diets rich in saturated fat, had very low blood cholesterol levels. They concluded that these findings disproved the Diet-Hart hypothesis. Keyes, however, dismissed Mann's Maasai work in several ways. He pointed to studies of other Kenyan nomads whose diets and blood cholesterol levels fit with the Diet-Hart hypothesis. Keyes then proposed several explanations for the Maasai's apparent uniqueness. He maintained that the Maasai were chronically unfed and frequently half-starved, which might account for their low rates of coronary artery disease. Furthermore, Mann had suggested that the Maasai's inclusion of sour milk in their diet might prevent their blood cholesterol levels from rising. This theory, Keyes pointed out, actually supported the notion that dietary intake was somehow related to the pathogenesis of heart disease. After he retired from medicine, Mann would proclaim Diet-Hart to be the greatest health scam of the century. Pretty bold statement to make. Mann's claim represented his long-held belief that Diet-Hart advocates were misguided by their blind faith in an unproven hypothesis and their abandonment of proper scientific methodology. To a certain degree, the debate came down to the question of epidemiology's role in clinical medicine. For Diet-Hart advocates, epidemiology represented a powerful tool that could provide answers to otherwise unanswerable questions. For Diet-Hart critics, epidemiology represented an imperfect science. While methodological debates raged on, with Keyes and Mann on the front lines, Diet Heart advocates worked to translate their knowledge into concrete public health recommendations. In 1959, Ansel Keyes and his wife Margaret provided one answer by publishing Eat Well and Stay Well, pictured here on the screen, which was a cookbook that introduced the Mediterranean diet, which was notable for its low levels of saturated fat, to the American public. The Keyeses used straightforward language to explain the Diet Heart hypothesis to their readers. Summarizing decades of research on atherosclerosis in animals and in humans, they concluded that fats had an effect on blood and that cholesterol, in turn, was deposited within the arteries. Yet the Keyes did not shy away from the Diet Heart debates. They explained to their readers that some medical and public health professionals looked very suspiciously upon Diet Heart, but they personally believed the evidence to be impressive. Readers who were persuaded by the evidence were encouraged to follow the diet recommendations in Eat Well and Stay Well. Eat Well and Stay Well debuted at number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list, sold over 75,000 copies in 4 months, and exhausted 4 printings during that span of time. In celebration of this success, Time magazine made Ansel Keyes, whom they deemed Mr. Cholesterol, a cover subject, again pictured here. The cookbook spurred the publication of numerous heart health advice books that, more often than not, endorsed a low-cholesterol, low-fat diet. And here are some of the early cookbooks. You see Eat Well, Stay Well, the second from the left, and a few representative examples of other early heart health cookbooks. And despite uncertainty in the medical literature, Diet Heart proponents like Keyes were able to bypass the medical establishment by taking their recommendations directly to the public by way of these cookbooks. And for much of the 1960s, Diet Heart proponents saw cholesterol control rapidly gain status as a way to prevent heart disease. In short, the history of the Diet Heart debates stands as an enlightening example of rising tensions regarding epidemiology's relationship to post-war biomedicine. This history brings to the fore several vexing questions. What counted as scientific proof? How were researchers and physicians supposed to interpret the substantial body of epidemiological investigations that produced non-definitive and sometimes contradictory evidence? Furthermore, how were physicians supposed to apply that data to clinical practice? As one cardiologist lamented in 1990, quote, "What is so puzzling is why we have to work so hard to sell the message given what seems to be an unbeatable amount of hard evidence." Although cholesterol skeptics have been relegated to fringe status since the 1990s, there's not been a true resolution of the debate about cholesterol control, and disagreement about what constitutes heart healthiness persists. In fact, the debate about the diet heart hypothesis has gradually shifted toward one about the risks of statin therapy. And here are examples of relatively recent texts published in the last 5 to 10 years that all focus on questions not only about the validity of the diet heart hypothesis and the notion of controlling cholesterol as a way to prevent heart disease, but also the presumed negative impact of Lipitor and other statins in general. For Diet Heart advocates, selling the message meant grappling with how to use the data derived from complex population-based studies to formulate heart-healthy recommendations for individuals. On the one hand, using this data enabled researchers and policymakers to demonstrate how epidemiological investigations could contribute to the formulation of heart-healthy recommendations. On the other hand, it also brought attention to unresolved methodological and analytical issues, providing critics with a ready source of ammunition. The interdisciplinary nature of the new field and the ambiguity of diet heart evidence stirred professional discord. Advocates like Keyes and critics like Mann sowed scientific doubt in each other's interpretations, prompting a decades-long pursuit to confirm a hypothesis that had, ironically, almost immediately become clinical and public health orthodoxy. Thank you.